Okay, so welcome to the second class. In my own notes, I don't think I mentioned this, but in my own notes, I have names for these classes, and I decided to change the names retroactively. So in the first class, I think the theme was appreciating space, and there were some nice posts on that on the website about the quality of appreciation. Then the second class, this class, I'm calling inhabiting space, which I mentioned that notion of inhabiting in the transition. That's what I'm calling the notes that I post. I encourage you to look at those during the week. We will be talking about inhabiting space today. So last week, we did a couple of things in terms of exercises that are related to the theme. So the basic idea was to introduce an appreciation for space. So there's actually a nice discussion in Dynamics of Time and Space. Some of you might like to look at it. It's just a couple of pages. Actually, it comes up a couple of times in the book, I think, where Rinpoche says that space has disappeared for us, that the only thing we can really connect to is the objects that show up in space. And I think what that means, in if you just think of it in terms of our ordinary experience, you can say, well, yes, that's true, because when you look for space, you can't find anything. You know, your space is never there. So we wanted to challenge that. The word challenge is usually a pretty good word in TSK. We're challenging our usual assumptions by introducing new possibilities and then seeing what happens. So it's a kind of ongoing experiment. But it's also an ongoing challenge to the way we usually see things. So what we usually see with regard to space is nothing at all. There's just nothing there. And Bruce commented on that and how nothing can turn into something more positive. And that's what we were kind of exploring with the idea of appreciating space. Hayward had a nice reflection on that just in the very simple act, I think, of walking through a parking lot, you know, the appreciation for space allowing that without getting in the way or being disturbed itself in any way. No ripples in space, as he said, caused by his movement. Klaus also had a nice comment. He cited a passage from one of the TSK books, which says, space is all the therapy we need. That's the exact language in the book. Space is all the therapy we need. And I looked that up because I have, and you too can have, if you don't already, all of the TSK books on CD. And then you can do a search for terms. So I looked it up. It's from Sacred Dimensions of Time and Space. And it's a very nice thought. Space is all the therapy we need. Why is that? Well, it ties in very closely to the idea of appreciation. If, you know, set space aside for a moment, if you could just appreciate everything that happens. Acceptance is kind of step one, I suppose, and appreciation is step two, but they arise together. The world would be a pretty wonderful place, you know. You wouldn't have to be in the business of rejecting or wishing for something else. So space is all the therapy we need. I like that. And Ileana said something that I thought was interesting in regard to appreciation also, and that is that, this isn't quite what she said, but this is what I took from it, that we develop appreciation for space, but appreciation itself is a kind of space. It's being open. And I think we should take words like open seriously. You know, we use words like that all the time, very casually, and as a kind of metaphor, and we don't think about them too much. But when you talk about being open to space, or as I should say, being open to experience, that's bringing a kind of a spacious quality into experience. So appreciation itself is space, and appreciating space is a way, I think, of appreciating what appears in space in a different way. Now, I've taken a little time at the beginning of this class today to comment on people's comments on the website, partly because I wanted to remind people that that option is there and to encourage people to use it. The people who posted this week are, every one of them, I believe, had gone through the two-year TSK training that we completed last year. So they're all old timers, and in some ways you could say that's reflected in their comments. I think there's a kind of a natural appreciation for space and for the TSK vision, or maybe I shouldn't say natural, an appreciation that has developed through a kind of intensive study and engagement with the vision. So if you think you might like to post something and you aren't that familiar with the TSK vision, believe me, that's not necessary. You know, it's not necessary that you have spent a lot of time studying it. The practice is, one of the really wonderful things about the TSK vision, actually, is that the practices have an impact immediately. You know, or if you think of them as experiments, you could say, you get results immediately in the experiment. Something shifts, something happens. And that means that you know, practicing for a couple of minutes can be very helpful, very useful. And it also means that you don't need to be an expert in TSK. Nobody ever needs to be an expert in TSK. In fact, being an expert is kind of a problem, because when you're an expert, you say, I know. And as Rinpoche writes in one of the TSK books, when you say, I know, you're saying, I stop here. We want to go past those stop signs that our usual experience erects. Go just breeze right past them. Okay. So the other practice we did last week that I asked you to do, I can't remember if we really did it in the class right now, but it was just related to that. It was the sense of being here, being present. I'd be interested if anybody has anything to say about that, or write in the chat box. I'm not quite used to this new chat box and this new software, so I'm going to have to remember to look at it. Let's see, maybe I can move it over here. okay. That may help. And by the way, Bruce mentioned that he had raised his hand, which is what we asked people to do, and then nobody noticed, or I didn't notice. And I've forgotten right now, somebody told us last week how to raise your hand. I think if you go into participants, right? Is that right? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about raising your hand. We'll be a little less formal than that. Just speak up if you have something to say. I don't think it'll be a question of everybody trying to speak at once. So I think we'll be fine. Okay, what I'd like to do is start with a short practice related to what we've been doing. And really all these practices, I think, are going to kind of grow out of each other. Well, maybe it doesn't matter how I describe it. We'll see. We'll see how it works. But this idea of appreciation grows naturally into the theme for today, which is inhabiting space. So the practice is very simple, and it grows out of the idea that we looked at last time, the practice we looked at of just being here, right? Being here. So the emphasis is just a little bit different. Let yourself be, in your experience, be aware of yourself at the center of experience. Now, if we wanted to raise questions about the nature of the self, we could do that, but we'll get into that a little later. But right now, it's not, we're not trying to say anything very sophisticated about the self. We just want to develop a sense, a really kind of clear sense, that at the center of your experience, there's the self. And the one thing I want to say about that before we do it is that when I say at the center of your experience, I don't mean that it's this little place, if I had, let's see if I could back my computer away. It's not like it's like right here, or here's where I am, or actually very often when people, if you look carefully at where your sense of self is, very often in many contexts and for most people, it's between the eyes, right? Right here, or somewhere around there. So if you're going to locate the self, you could say that's where it is. But when I say center, I actually mean something more like the whole circle. So there's the circle, there's the center of the circle, and then there's the periphery of the circle. And the periphery in this case doesn't really have any boundaries. So to say that the self is at the center of your experience means that you're open to all of your experience, but with a sense that you really are at the center of your experience. So if we anticipate this theme of inhabiting space, which is not a complicated idea, it would be like saying you're inhabiting all of your experience. You're at the center of all of your experience, inhabiting all of your experience. That's the practice, being at the center, which is not one limited place. There are no particular boundaries. Just be at the center. Okay, let's do that for a couple of minutes. Okay. So, as always, when we do these practices, we're just getting a little taste of what it's like. And we want to make sure we have a sense of you know, how to do the practice so that you can continue to explore it during the week. So I will open the floor for any comments or questions. Yes, Hayward. Yes. Yeah, I think that's true. So there's actually two ways, and we'll be talking about this in a few minutes, in a little more depth, but you know, one way to put the eye at the center, to be at the center, is in this kind of interpretive mode, this me that shows up that is located at the center. And the other possibility, I think, is to be present at the center. And so the reason I emphasize the idea of expanding out, you know, is kind of inhabiting the whole of your experience from the center, is that I think in that way you tend to kind of undermine that interpretive self, or that the one with the identity, the me. So those those two poles of experience, I think it's important, really important to get a good sense of that. So let's take a look here, a couple of comments. David says, as the center of experience, which is already an interesting way of saying it, not at the center, but as the center. I become aware all things relate back here to a felt sense or reference point. Okay. That's, I think, like what Hayward was saying about the I or the me. In this moment, an open sense of hearing, the feel of my body in this chair, the slight chill of air on skin, visually the feel of colors outside of sky, and trees, excite my interior. I like that phrase, they excite my interior. Yeah, that's a way of kind of expanding out from the center, right? It's very body oriented, very senses oriented, but there is a world that we're connecting to. Okay, good. Lily writes, with the eye at the center, there is a sense of observing everything and wanting to control what's happening. Okay, good. So that, again, I think is related to what Hayward said. I was kind of thinking more of the other pole of experience with this exercise, but it's very helpful to get the distinction, to say, you know, the eye at the center reaches out to grasp things. And this very much related, remember, to the beginning, the first paragraph, and we're going to talk about the second paragraph today, too, from the reading. Yes, yes, yes. Well, that's just, yeah, that's good. That's very good. That's where we're headed. I think I really want to be able to introduce that sense that the self is centerless, but I'm wanting to take it one step at a time because I think it's easier, because I think it makes it more accessible. But the distinction is exactly the right distinction. And I think I kind of, in thinking about this exercise, discounted the tendency, which is very much our starting point, absolutely, that the self is at the center, the self has an identity, the self is located right there. And so I was starting to mention the first paragraph of the reading, this essay that is kind of guiding us. There's the knowledge that the knower, rather, who operates as the observer of appearance, situated in a place, emerging from a background, standing outside what's experienced, what's not said here, and I think it's what we've come across now in doing this practice, situated outside of experience, but also situated at the very center of experience, right? Occupying this place, this particular place that the self has. So that, I think Lily helped, your comment helps clarify that. Thank you. And then Bruce says, everything was pervaded by the oil of Amnes. That's interesting. By the oil, you mean kind of the lubricant? Is that why you say oil, Bruce? You have to unmute yourself if you want to speak up. Yeah. Oh, I see. Okay. Right. Right. Okay. Okay, good. Well, that's actually a kind of a bridge between those two different ways of looking at the self. So that's all very interesting. Okay, good. Yes, Michael. Okay, good. And then I don't know who Acer E1 is here. That's a code name for somebody participating. Said it's a certain knowing quality. Okay, so I think that's fair to say that, you know, if you say that the self is at the center of experience, the self is the knower. That goes right back to our to the reading. You know, what is it that we bring to the world? You could say various, you can give a lot of answers to that, but it doesn't seem like in our ordinary understanding that there's anybody else who knows. Of course, we think there are other people who know, but in terms we have a lot of evidence that there are other people who know, but the only place we actually experience knowing is in ourselves, most of the time. Okay, well, let's that's great. Let's move on. I think I'm going to skip a practice that I had in mind, instead, let's really talk a little about this distinction between these two ways of being at the center of experience. So I've already mentioned them, identified them, and I want to spell it out a little bit. And the distinction, the way I want to talk about it is that on the one hand, or one model, you could say, and I don't mean a model in the sense that we have this nice theory. I mean, this is the model that guides how we interact with the world. And that model is locatedness. It's the one that gets talked about at the beginning of the essay. The self is located in the world, and it's located in a particular way, the way of the bystander, right? The other way that I want to talk about is the possibility of inhabiting space. So the bystander mode, the bystander way of being the self, it's very interesting when you think about it. And I think, you know, people probably have reflected on this. So what I say is maybe self-evident for some people, but still, let's talk about it. So we say that we're here. That was what we looked at in the first class. If you ask the question, what does that mean to be here? It's actually a kind of puzzling thing because unlike an object like the desk, you can say the desk is there. In some context, we might say the desk is here. But if I look at it now, I say, well, there it is. There's the desk. Or if I touch it, I guess. There it is. The self is not like that. The bystander is not like that. You can't point to the self. Right? You have a sense of where the self is located. As I said before, it seems like it's located behind your eyes or in your body. And you can certainly point to the body. Because, I mean, it's a little tricky, but you know, I can take my hand and point to my chest. I can't take my finger and point to the finger, which is interesting too. But basically, you can point to the body, but that doesn't mean you're pointing to the self. It's my body, right? And I'm very attached to it and associated with it. But that's not the self. When you look for the self, there isn't really any answer. The self doesn't have a location in space. The I, let's say, doesn't have a location in space in the same way that everything else does. And in making that point, I'm really just making the point that Descartes made, you know, 400 years ago, at the beginning of modern philosophy. And I don't want to get into that too much, but he basically said there's two kinds of things in the world. There are the things that are extended in space, and then there's the I, which is not extended in space. It's got its own way of being. It's a thinking thing, he said, a cogitating, you know, res cogitans. It's a thinking thing. It does not have extension in space. It's not even this very, very tiny little thing. You know, back in the 19th century when they were refining their instruments, their scientific instruments, there were some people who said, well, now that we can measure things so carefully, let's see if we can measure the existence of the soul. And so they would weigh people right before they died and right after they died to see if they weighed less. And they would say, well, that's proof that the soul exists. Unfortunately, it didn't matter how good their instruments were. There was no difference. You know? So I guess you could conclude from that the self is not in the world in the same way as other objects. So when we say the self is located here, we don't mean it's located in space. But there is also the self as the object, the self that's identified with the body. And then there's the self that is, that has properties that no other objects have, it seems, as far as we can tell. Again, we assume that other people have them, but that's just based on the evidence available to us. So if you look at the second paragraph in this essay, so we've identified the bystander observer as standing outside what's observed. And then he says the bystander observer has various pre-established qualities, including character or identity, attitude, and the faculties available for performing observations. These qualities contribute to locatedness. Right? And this relates back to something that was said in the first paragraph that I remember I skipped over last week because I didn't know what to say about it, but now I've thought about it some more. He says, the knower is situated in a place, emerging from a background. So what I've just been referring to now is kind of the background. Right? This knower is not some suddenly popping into existence entity. It's got this background. It's got character. It's got the qualities that let it observe. It's got an attitude, right? It's got certain reactions. It's got the whole mental realm, you could say. I don't want to make it sound more complicated than it is. So the self is located in that second way, which you could say has more to do with time. Because it has to do with the history. It emerges out of a background. So if you say, I'm here I am, the I that's here has its identity and it has its properties and capacities and abilities. And all that comes with the sense of being at the center of experience, being located somewhere. But whether you're talking about a kind of physical location, which is problematic, or you're talking about this mental locatedness, which seems to have to do with time, there is that sense of being located. And it's a problematic sense, and that's kind of what's motivating us here. Being located, especially with respect to all these mental properties, we're you know, there's nothing like us in the world. So what I mean by that is you know, we look around and everything is just this thing, right? Everything just has this kind of thing property to it. Let me put it this way. It doesn't have an inside. Now, inside and outside, in some ways, that's maybe not the right way to talk about things. But for our purposes right now, I think it's fine. What I mean by inside, I mean interior. That is to say, I have feelings, I have reactions, I know things. As far as we can tell, and you could have contrary theories, there are contrary theories. But as far as we can tell in our kind of ordinary way, things like tables and lamps and clocks don't have that interior. They're just these things. So we're special, but being special also means we're kind of lonely. We're alienated. We're isolated. We don't fit into the world. And that all comes with this sense of being located, because when we're located here, then everything else is there, right? Everything else is outside, and we're just, there's this distance that separates us. So we talked about that last week. That's when I say that's what's motivating us. It's this sense of being special, but also cut off and not at home in the world. So, you know, if we had a sense that the world was, you know, God's sensorium, as somebody, I can't remember who it is right now, somebody said that. But if we just thought, you know, well, no, God is in the world, then we wouldn't feel so alone. Because there's, you know, we can commune. We have the same properties at a different level, presumably, that God does, some of the same properties. But most people don't have that sense. So we do feel alone. So instead of that, we want to go to this notion of inhabiting space. And the idea here is that if we inhabit space, we're not cut off from it. So if we inhabit it and inhabit it fully, it's a different way of being in space. Space itself becomes different. That's really where we're headed. So Hayward talked a few minutes ago. I don't remember now exactly the language you used, Hayward, but you know, if we don't have this sense of the identity of the self. Okay. Yeah. So if we're not. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So if we're up. Mm-hmm. Right, so that's what we're talking about, is the idea that the self doesn't have this separate identity, and locatedness has to do with identity. If we aren't located anywhere, then we can't really say that we have an identity. So maybe the way to say that is, let's say that instead of being located here, because that's where the self always is, right? It's always here. Instead of being located here, if we said it's located everywhere, which is more kind of related to this idea of inhabiting space, then it really wouldn't have an identity. Because in order to have an identity, you have to separate yourself out, or you have to separate a thing out. You know? This yellow pad on my desk is located in a particular place, and because it is, I can say that it has an identity. If we're located everywhere along with everything else, I couldn't say that. Right? Identity and locatedness go together. So when we're located in a particular place, it's like taking up a particular position. Right? And that position is here. I mean, the self is always located here. But inhabiting is different. So if you say, and this may sound a little bit awkward, I mean, it's not what we usually say, but if you say, I inhabit my body, or let's say, you know, I'm an inhabitant of Berkeley, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm located in a particular place. It means that I kind of inhabit the whole thing, right? That's roughly how we want to look at it. We'll do a practice in a moment, which is meant to make that a little more, or to begin to introduce that, right? So inhabiting has to do with inhabiting the whole. And in order to do that, we really do have to let go of the sense of self. And that's what we are going to do in a moment. We're going to do a practice. Now, there's a comment. Let me go back and find, okay. From, okay, who's that? Where am I? Who are you? Oh, hi, Sudhi. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. 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 You're saying, is okay, say it again as a question. Is that space, go ahead and put it in the form of a question. I missed it. Mm-hmm. There. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, they may be. I mean, you know, we're using words here, and words are always just pointers. So, you know, you may be pointing to the same thing, but I do think there's an interesting distinction to be made because, The distinction is we're not necessarily trying to go to a place before, you know, our ordinary experience arises. I mean, it might be that you could describe it that way. But, you know, we're trying to do something that in a way is very simple. We just want to understand space and our relationship to space differently. And when we, to the extent we can do that, or as we become comfortable with doing that, then the nature of our experience shifts. And, you know, you could say it's the same experience, but we've now learned to appreciate space, to come back to that sense. Okay, now Bruce had a comment here. There's an exercise in a book by Judith Blackstone, or maybe it's not a book, she does work called Realization Process, okay, where you feel the self as a quality or feeling, not an idea, in each part of your body, inhabiting that part. Okay. And then near the end of the exercise, as pervading the whole body at once, and finally, as continuous with an inhabiting space that pervades everything. My sense of the taste of amness throughout my experiential field, so as an oil, right, that has pervaded everything, was my way of talking about this general feeling of self in as all things. But self here is not meant in the sense of the bystander, more as a sense of open, pervasive contactfulness and intimacy. Yeah, I think, I mean, that sounds like a very, very good exercise, and it definitely is pointing in the same direction as what we're looking at here. And yes, it's not locatedness. So the way that I'm trying to differentiate locatedness is by talking in terms of inhabiting space. Now, just to anticipate, next week we're going to look at some of the characteristics of space when you approach it in a located kind of way, kind of ordinary space. And we'll look at those. But that's next week. Right now, we're kind of opening up the other side. And a number of you have said very helpful things in terms of how to do that or how one would go about it. So I want to do a little practice now that is a way of doing that. And it relates to the breath. So, you know, I imagine that just about everybody has a sense of or has experienced or worked with the breath, because in meditation circles, at least in the West, it seems like we always start with the breath. And in fact, that's true, you know, in most Buddhist traditions. Working with the breath is at least a very standard way. It's one that seems to be well accepted in the West. So we too are going to work with the breath, but a little bit differently. And in a way, you'll see right away that it's related to what we're saying here. What I want to do is rely on a way we have of speaking in English and in fact, in the other languages that I know something about, Western languages, it's the same thing. And that is the way we speak when we talk about the weather. Certain other things too, but the weather. Michael, I see you have a comment here, but I'm going to move on now. Maybe we'll get back to it. What we do is, when it's raining out, for instance, we say, it's raining. And the it in the it's raining is a kind of a special case. It's not the way we usually use the subject and the verb, right? Because if you say, well, what's the it that's raining? Yeah, well, there isn't an it that's raining. It's just raining, right? So language requires us to assign an it. But really, it would be a little more accurate to say raining, right? Or you could use a more complicated explanation, maybe. But basically, when we say it's raining, we're just pointing to the raining. So what I'd like us to do with the breath, and we'll do this for a few minutes, and actually I'm going to do it a couple of times. So the first time we won't do it for very long at all. I'd like us to do the same thing with breathing and just say it's breathing. And so what I mean by that, I hope that's clear, is let the breath come and go. You know, the self does not have to be the one that's doing the breathing. We have a certain amount of control over the breath, but basically the breath goes by itself. So let go of the self's ownership of breathing, which really isn't real anyway, but we just, you know, we would normally say, well, I'm breathing. Who's breathing? I'm breathing. Yeah. If you ask the who question, then the who answer is I'm the one that's breathing. But if you don't ask a who question, you just say it's breathing, right? There's a breathing going on. That would be another way to say it. So let's do that practice for a couple of minutes. Just it's breathing, letting go of the self as the one who breathes. So there's the body felt quality. So you might be aware of the lungs expanding or the diaphragm rising and falling, things that you're all probably familiar with. So that's the practice. It's breathing, a couple of minutes, okay? Thank you. Okay, now I want to break into the practice. We'll go back to it in just a moment, but I want to make 2 points, and then we'll go back into it for a couple of minutes more. The first point is, you might have noticed, or you might look to see, there's a certain I think there's certain hesitance on the part of the self to give up its ownership. I'm the one who's breathing. There's a little resistance, and you might notice that resistance. The second thing, and the additional factor that I want to bring in, which may have already been there, is that when we say it's raining, one of the reasons we say it's raining is because the rain is everywhere, right? When we're out in the rain, it's like we can't. We know that somewhere in the world it's not raining, but in terms of our experience right now, the rain is everywhere. And I think that we'd like, it's good to think about breathing the same way. So whatever else is going on in your experience, so if a thought comes or a feeling or a memory, it doesn't matter. The breathing is still there. It's the breathing is pervasive in the same way that the rain is pervasive. So I want to just add in that quality. So let's go back into the breathing now. Couple of minutes more. Okay. So I'll open the floor for discussion, for comments, questions. Well, in the meantime, let me look at Michael's last comment, which was before we did this practice. I'm going to try to just summarize it. Says that because the self is cut off, it's not extended in space. Maybe it's more like a traveler. It's homeless, and that means that maybe it's kind of interested in seeing what's going on. Like he said, he uses a nice image, a child looking through a shop window, kind of like that, marveling at the displays. Well, wouldn't that be nice if we marveled at everything we experience? But I don't think we usually do that. So it's a good question. Why? Okay, well, I see. Did I hear somebody start to speak up? Yes. Okay. Right, that's good. By the way, I noticed last time in the recording that when people speak during the recording, this is a fluke of the software I use for recording. it doesn't record. So I'm going to try to remember to summarize what people said. Bruce said that breathing is an interesting place to do this. It's breathing because the self does have some control over breathing, whereas with it seeing, it's easier to see that, you know, it's not in the control of the self. Yeah, I agree, actually. The breathing is a very interesting place for exactly that reason. You get to see how the breath, how the self wants to hold on. Okay, well, right. No. Oh. Well, that's very nice. Yeah. Well, that's great. I, you know, have been using this "it's raining" model for a little while, and it never occurred to me to connect it to the title "When It Rains, Does Space Get Wet?" But so thank you for pointing that out. And I think the way you, parsed it, interpreted it as you know, space is raining is also, that's a nice way to think about it. Okay, well, let's stop there for today. Those practices, I'll remind you of them in the transition, but especially the second one, this it's breathing and the kind of expansive or pervasive quality, I think that would be good to work with during the week. Okay. That's it. And by the way, Kathleen, I'm going to save the chat. I don't know if you've been doing that, but I'll just click on it now. Done. Okay. Thanks very much, everybody. See you next week. Thank you.